your shield and get outside.
You there!
A man's voice yelled in English.
Stop that, or I'll shoot!
Ore Carrier Cromwell. Despite his outward show of confidence as he sat in the command chair on the bridge, Cromwell's skipper felt decidedly nervous as the creaking old ore ship cruised toward Vesta inside the radiation cloud. As surreptitiously as he could, he kept an eye on the console that monitored the radiation levels inside and outside his ship. A glaring red light showed that the sensors outside were reporting lethally high radiation, enough to kill a man in minutes. Next to that baleful red glow on the control panel, a string of peaceful pale green lights reported that radiation levels inside the ship were close to normal. Good enough, the captain said to himself. So far, we still have a long way to go. He had worked out with the special weapons tech how close they would have to be to Vesta before releasing the twin missiles that contained the nanomachines. They had developed three possible scenarios. The first one was the basic plan of attack, the flight path they would follow if everything went as planned and they were not detected by Humphrey's people. That was the trajectory they were following now, sneaking along inside the radiation cloud until they reached the predetermined release point. If they were detected on their way into Vesta, or if the ship developed some critical malfunction, such as a breakdown of its radiation shielding, a possibility that made the captain shudder, then they would release the missiles early and hope that they would not be seen or intercepted by Vesta's defense systems. The skipper and the weapons tech had worked out a release point for that contingency. It was only 6 hours from where they were now. Their third option was to call off the attack altogether. That decision would be entirely and solely up to the captain. Only a major disaster would justify abandoning the attack, such as a serious malfunction of the ship's systems or an interception by HSS vessels. Cruising blind and deaf inside the radiation cloud, watching the sensor readings on the control panel, the skipper thought that of the three options before him, he much preferred number two. Let's get to the early release point, fire the damned missiles at Vesta, and get the hell out of here before something goes wrong. He got up from the command chair. All four of his crew turned from their consoles toward him. I'm going to catch some Z's, he said gruffly. You take your normal relief one at a time. Ms. Yamaguchi, you have the con. Wake me in 5 hours. Yes, sir, 5 hours. The captain ducked through the hatch. His quarters were immediately aft of the bridge. 5 hours, he thought. I'll make the decision after a good nap, when my mind is fresh. He knew what he wanted that decision to be.
Humphrey's Mansion. In his basement office, Humphrey's security chief watched the screens on the wall to one side of his desk with glowing dismay. Four guys are holding off 24 of my people. The dumb bozos are just sitting there like a bunch of petrified chipmunks. And now the back staircase is on fire. Humphrey's is gonna fry my ass for this. Angrily, he punched the keyboard on his desk. What the hell are you punks doing, waiting for hot dogs so you can have a fucking barbecue? He had only a voice link with his team upstairs, no video.
I got 6 people wounded here.
You got 12.5 untouched. Go get the intruders.
Why should we rush them and take more casualties? They're not going anywhere. We can wait them out.
While the fucking house burns down, the chief yelled.
Then we'll burn them out.
The chief thought it over swiftly. Humphreys is sealed into his master suite. They can't get to him. The fires triggered the automatic alarms. That upstairs hallway is closed off by airtight doors. Windows are already sealed. Okay. We'll let the fire do the job. It was getting smoky in the upstairs hall. Leaning his back against the overturned table, Fuchs peered down the hallway and saw flames licking at the carpet, spreading toward them. We must get out, Hammerjagel repeated. The flames reached the drapes on the farthest window. They began smoldering. Coughing, Sanja added, It is useless to die here, Captain. Fuchs wanted to pound his fists on the floor. Humphreys was a few meters away, cowering behind his protective cement barrier. The coward, Fuchs raged. The sniveling coward.
But he's smarter than I am. He's prepared for this attack while I've led my people into a stupid assault that will gain us nothing, even if we live through it.
He pictured Humphrey's smirking face and felt the rage rising inside him, even hotter than the flames creeping toward them.
The entire hallway is sealed off, the loudspeaker voice declared. The fire is going to suck all the oxygen out of your air. You have three choices: suffocate, roast, or surrender.
Sitting cross-legged on his oversized bed, Humphreys yelled at the wall-screen image of his security chief. You're letting them burn up the second-floor hallway? Do you have any idea of the value of the artwork on those walls? The furniture alone is worth more than your salary. The security chief looked distinctly uncomfortable. Sir, it's the only way to get them. They've wounded 6 of my people already. No sense getting more of them hurt. That's what I pay them for, Humphreys raged. To protect me. To kill that son of a bitch Fuchs. Not to burn my house down. Farrar was sitting on an upholstered chair on the far side of the spacious room, her robe demurely pulled down below her knees. The security chief was saying, You're perfectly safe inside your suite, Mr. Humphreys. The walls are concrete and your door is fireproof reinforced cermet. And my hallway's going up in flames. They started the fire, sir. My people didn't. And now they either surrender or the fire kills them. While your people sit on their asses. Stiffly, the security chief replied, Yes, sir. While my people keep the rest of the house secure and wait for the intruders to give themselves up. Humphreys stared at the chief's image for a long moment, panting with frustrated rage. Then he snarled, Don't look for a bonus at Christmas.
We're trapped here, Ammerzagel said, still as unemotional as a wood carving. Fuchs saw the flames licking up the window draperies, heard them hissing, edging along the carpeting toward them. But the smoke was no worse than it had been before. Annoying, but not suffocating.
Where's the smoke going? He muttered. Captain, we must do something, said Sanjay, his voice tense. We can't stay here much longer.
Fuchs scrambled to his feet and took a few steps along the wall. He saw the smoke curling up from the blazing drapes and streaming across the ceiling in a thin rolling layer. It grew noticeably thinner halfway along the hall.
Help me, he called to Sanjay as he grabbed a heavy chest of inlaid ebony.
The two men wrestled it into the middle of the hall, and Fuchs clambered up onto it. A ventilator, he saw, its grillwork cleverly disguised to look like an ornamental design on the ceiling. It was closed, he realized, but not completely. Some of the smoke was being sucked up through it. He pushed against it with both hands. It gave, but only slightly. Sanja immediately understood. He took a copper statuette from the nearest table and handed it up to Fuchs, base first. Fuchs pounded at the ventilator grill with a fury of desperation. It dented, buckled. With an animal roar, he smashed at it again, and the ventilator gave way with a screech of metal against metal. Immediately, the smoke slithering along the ceiling began pouring into the opening.
It's big enough to crawl through, he shouted.
Nodan, said Ammerzagel on her feet now. He's unconscious. Carry him. Come on. Fuchs hauled himself up into the ventilator shaft. It was filled with smoke and utterly dark inside. Coughing, he reached down for Nodon's still unconscious body.
This shaft can't be too long, he thought. Right near the roof, there must be an outlet nearby.
Crawling, coughing, eyes streaming with burning tears, he dragged Nodon's limp body through the shaft. Its metal walls felt hot to his fingers. But he slithered along, knowing that either he found his way out of the building, or he would soon die.
The security chief was peering at his display screens, straining to see what was going on in the dim shadows of the upstairs hall. The only light came from the flickering flames. The intruders were moving around, he felt sure, but it was almost impossible to make out anything definite in the smoke. Even the infrared cameras were virtually useless now. Several of the window draperies were blazing. The flames overloaded the surveillance camera's light-sensitive photocells. All he could see was overexposed flickers of flame and inky black shadows shambling around. the fires contained to the upstairs hall, he saw